Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Tangential Banter. My name is Ben Mowell, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jack Korsanowski.
Ahoy there, y'all. It's Thanksgiving break, at least for us. Probably not by the time this episode comes out.
Probably not. Maybe even definitely not. But it is holiday season. So should be a good opportunity to slow down a little bit. You know, catch up on your favorite podcast. Maybe while you're reading a book, sitting by the fire, stroking a cat, or eating chocolate, or listening to your favorite podcast. You know, all the important things.
Wait, so they're going to be reading a book while listening to their podcast and listening to a podcast?
Yes. Well, a different podcast in each year.
Yeah. See, I just noticed that I have two ears, which means that my learning efficiency has only at best been 50% my whole life. Let me get this straight. You just realized you have two ears.
Yes. Well, you could say not your learning efficiency, but your hearing efficiency at a minimum has been 50%.
I can't remember that's the specific line, but
what's it from?
It's from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Charlie gets put in this experiment for, like, this drug that, like, boosts your intelligence.
Oh, yeah. It's they parodied Flowers for Algernon.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. Because isn't it called, like, Flowers for Charlie? Isn't that the name of the episode or something?
Yeah, it is, I think. Something like that.
Yeah. Because he gets, like, super smart and then gets really...
Well, you and it's, well, I don't want to give the premise away, but basically, yes.
Yeah, that's the plot of Flowers for Algernon.
Gotcha.
I remember watching it and being like, so the only reason I know that is because my high school did that play. I think it was my freshman year, and I'd never heard of it before, and I was like, wow, this is kind of sad and dark. But an interesting concept nonetheless. And so then I saw that episode of Always Sunny. I was like, oh, I know where they got that idea. Which is actually, I think, some shows do that really well, where it's like a crossover that's not brash or not, like, obvious. You know, where they take a concept from somewhere else and it's almost more of an homage or something, but they work those into their regular
style.
Yeah. Yep. So that if you're paying attention and if you're, I don't know, if you're aware of other stories out there, you can be like, oh, they did this story and they did that story. And so the show is actually more of like an anthology kind of thing than, its own.
Mm.
No, that's not fair.
All I know is that the episode was funny and I liked it.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember, does he become like a professor or go to college or something in that episode?
I think what happens is at the end, his experimenters like present him and like by letting him like present something that he invented, and it turns out it's like, I have invented a way, and he has like this thing under a cloak or under like a cloth on a table. He's just like, it's like through my experimentation, and just has like this long rambling intelligent ease speech, and he says, I have finally invented a way, and then he like rips the cloth off and there's like a cage with a cat and then a cage with a spider for spiders to talk to cats.
As only Charlie would.
Yes. Oh man,
that's good. It just reminded me, for some reason, the scene where he's presenting his findings reminds me of the scene where Michael Scott goes to the like community college business class, or to I think it's Ryan's business class.
Yes.
And then he's like throwing out candy bars and stuff like that.
If you do everything right, you may make $100,000.
He just chucks it and hits somebody in the head, I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
Oh, man. Well, we do have some topics today that have been come up very recently. They're timely to the holiday season, all the special kinds of foods that we have and parties and stuff like that. So I thought we might introduce those. And these were actually the brain children. You don't say that very often. Brain childs.
Brain children, I think, makes sense.
Yeah. The brain children of some conversations we had this last week, actually. And the first one was that we discovered we have different ways of defining what fast food is, different definitions for fast food. And so I thought I would start by asking you the question, Jack, of how do you define what fast food is?
Ooh. So in my mind, and as you know, but as the listeners don't, fast food to me has always been like kind of specifically like a burger joint, like McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's. Arby's is really flirting the line with it's kind of a step up from fast food. I would still consider it fast food. I guess it'd be a maybe a higher quality fast food. Not so much in the maybe quality of the ingredients. So that could be. I think that Arby's can be considered a step up, but it's also like they serve like, you know, sliced roast beef, and that's not quite the same as like some pink slime patty that a sick like a pimple faced 16-year-old fried up in the back. It was probably sliced up by a pimply faced 16-year-old, but it's still roast beef. And what wouldn't qualify to me as fast food is something like Subway, Quiznos. The example of Potbelly came up, and that's never struck me as fast food, because mm-hmm. it's definitely on a more fancier side, at least relative to fast food. KFC would not be fast food in my brain. Popeye's chicken, like chicken places, wouldn't be considered fast food. And maybe Asian oriented places like Panda Express or Leon Chin, I wouldn't consider those fast food either in my head. It's always specifically been the burger joint sort of place.
What about T-Bell or Taco John's?
Oh, yeah. I don't know Taco John's well enough to say what sort of place that's like. But Taco Bell, yeah, I would say Taco Bell is fast food. So okay. That one breaks away from the burger style criterion. But one, its meat's just ground beef, cheap ground beef. And then it has the reputation of intestinal distress that I think qualifies as fast food.
Yeah. Because
like, I wouldn't consider Chipotle fast food.
Chipotle?
Yeah, even though that has like the same, you know, concept where it's just, you know, it's tacos and burritos and bowls.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely a step up from Taco Bell. And that's not a knock on Taco Bell. They fill two different needs.
So, okay, summarizing what you said, I think I'm hearing like two kind of unspoken criteria that you would use, or that maybe for starting to lay out a set of Venn diagrams or a Venn diagram with a set of circles where things overlap and are differentiated. All the items that fall into your set of what you would define as fast food would include, so you mentioned ground beef, that was the spoken one, but the two things I was thinking of were there's an element of, I'm not sure what to describe it as, but you kind of said Potbelly's is like fancier or something like that. So there's this element of tiers of formality or of restaurant fanciness. And fast food is apparently at the bottom of that tier list. Mm-hmm. And then the other piece is that there's a high likelihood of gastrointestinal distress following consumption of fast food.
I mean, that's not a requirement, but it's certainly not helping the case, right? Like in
Yeah.
Taco Bell's like, well, it doesn't meet the burger, sort of picture in my brain, but it's got that reputation of, I guess, you know what it is? I think the intestinal distress inducement just speaks to the low quality. It really enforces that, yeah, this stuff is bad.
I mean, it's the high in preservatives, high in fried content, high in fat. Like, I mean, you can go down the list and check all the boxes of the specific ways that it's maybe low quality, not in terms of flavor, but in terms of health.
Right. Yeah, flavor. They just chuck all the cheater ingredients in. Sugar, fat, MSG probably, which I heard is actually like not bad for you. I mean, unless you eat it in like grotesque amounts, but that's true for anything. But it's like no worse for you than any other spice. It just got like this bad reputation because it was associated with foods that were
Well,
not good for you.
my understanding with MSG is it's not, I'm trying to think of how to describe this. The effect itself isn't negative. It's just used as an addictive substance, like nicotine would be in cigarettes.
Oh.
So it's not that the MSG itself is bad for you. It's that it wants you, it gets you wanting more of whatever it's put in.
Oh, I see.
So it's like, ooh, this fast food's great. Give me another one. And it's not the MSG that's causing you the negative health effects, but it's causing you to eat more of the things that induce negative health effects.
So if you go buy MSG at the store, which you can do, and
Mix
just
it into your food.
yeah, and like just have as much as you normally would, like if you just ration it out every day, like I do, then the downside isn't there. Granted, you might be hungrier because it tastes so good.
Should put a little MSG on my salad. This is the best salad I've ever had.
Yeah, maybe
Want
I
more
will get
salad?
some MSG just to experiment.
Maybe a little nicotine too. Sprinkle that on
Oh,
there.
jeez. Why does my
Hey,
pork chop taste like Doritos?
if corporations can use it to your detriment, why can't we use it ourselves to our benefit?
Yeah, just infuse all, like, just get a bunch of real healthy food, salad, lean meat, brown rice, and just dump a bunch of MSG and nicotine on it.
Yeah, what could go wrong?
I've heard
Not medical advice. Big
nicotine.
bold letters first and
We are not doctors nor nutritionists.
this is where the oh, what's his name? Nick.
Nick, 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 Nick,
He,
Nick,
Ron
Nick,
Swanson, Nick.
Nickelodeon, Nick Offerman.
Nick Offerman, the Fremulon, not a doctor.
What's that from?
It's from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I think it's like Andy Samberg and Nick Offerman have some production companies or whatever. So after the credits, it says Fremulon and then not a doctor. So anyway, okay. So circling back around. Wait, you made a comment. You ration out something daily. What are you rationing out?
Oh, just my food. Like every week I make a plan for what I'm going to eat during the week.
Oh, sure.
And that's for two reasons mostly. One is so that I know what I need to get to the grocery store. And two, just keeping track of, caloric intake, macro intake. If you just eat willy-nilly, you don't know how many calories you're eating. You don't know if you're eating too much carbs and not enough protein. And then it's like, well, I need to get groceries for the upcoming week. What the heck do I get if I don't know what I'm going to eat?
Right, yeah.
I'm one of those people that can eat the same thing like every day, like have the same lunch, have the same dinner. I only eat twice a day. And just
So,
do that
no
for 2 weeks.
breakfast.
Yeah, I don't eat breakfast. I do that for two reasons. One, when I had a period of where I wanted to lose a good chunk of weight, which I did, and that I when I was doing that, I learned about intermittent fasting and I gave that a try. So it's like where you only eat for like depends on what how you want to do it, but it's I think the usual window is like you just have an 8 hour window in the day that you can eat every day. So it'd be like from noon to 8 p.m. for example. It's like you have all your food in that window every day, and a lot of people will tighten it even more, like even down to 5 hours. So because of that, right, I was like, okay, I can either have breakfast to lunch or lunch and dinner. And it's like, well, I ain't gonna not have dinner. So then I picked lunch and dinner. I also learned that your body is in fat storage mode in the morning and not so much in the evening. So it's like, if you are gonna cut a meal out, it should be breakfast if you're trying to lose weight. I'm not sure if that's true or if it's true for everybody, but that's just what I was going off of. And you have coffee in the morning anyway, or at least I do, and coffee's an appetite suppressant. So all of these stars are kind of aligning, like, yeah, just kick breakfast out. Because you're going to have coffee anyway. You're not going to be as hungry in the morning for breakfast as you will be hungry for dinner in the evening. Breakfast is probably the worst time to eat anyway. And I always prefer dinner over breakfast anyhow. So all that stuff. And yeah, so that's the story why I don't eat breakfast. And eating three, like I like when I eat, I like to sit down, you know, get the TV going, watch a show I'm going through. That's the main way I watch shows, just while I'm eating. So it's like I usually like to take like an hour, because then you eat and you kind of just sit there watching until you're ready to move on. So if I did that three times a day, that's a lot of time. So I cut it down to two.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I think there's definitely, I've been in periods of time where I didn't eat breakfast for a while and I didn't really feel like I missed it that much. Conversely, there'll be days at work where, I'll just be chugging along doing stuff and it'll be 2 or 3 o'clock before I realize that I'm hungry. And I don't know, days where lunch isn't super exciting either. But yeah, I'm with you in that. For about the past year, I've been getting more and more consistent about meal prep on Sundays. So I typically have yogurt for breakfast. And then, so it's a fairly small breakfast, but just something in my stomach that's, got some protein in it. And then for lunch, I've been pre-making salads. And at least this is during the work week. Saturday and Sunday, I kind of leave open, but for the reasons you mentioned, it just makes it a lot easier to know what you need to shop for. And it also gives me some comfort that I don't have to think about eating healthy necessarily. It's just done for me. And then I can be a little bit more free with what I do around the edges of that for dinner or on the weekends, because the vast majority of my meals are already set up to be intentionally what I want them to be. Okay, so that was a good tangent.
It was.
But going back to categorizing fast food. So
you asked me what I classify as fast food. Do we want to go into what you would classify? Or how you would classify it?
Sure. Is that you asking the question, or should I?
No, yeah, go ahead. Okay. Like, how do you define fast food, Ben?
Well, Jack, I'm glad you asked. Lovely question. I was thinking about this as we were talking on Wednesday, because to me, I think it's if the establishment has a drive-through is what I would constitute as fast food. And I should say that if that chain, that's also a good sign. If it's a chain restaurant, not always, right? Like Applebee's isn't, Texas Roadhouse isn't, but
they don't have drive-thrus, do they?
No, they don't. Okay. So I'm not saying what I was trying to indicate is that chains and fast food have a high level of overlap, but it's obviously not one for one.
Okay.
But what I was going to say is, if a chain consistently has a drive-through with their store, I think that qualifies them as fast food. there may be specific locations that don't have a drive-through, and that doesn't make them not fast food, if that makes sense. Sometimes they're like space constrained where it's a fast food joint, but they can't have a drive-through for whatever reason.
Like in a big city or something.
Yeah, right. Yep. But so, I mean, that applies to, well, some of the categories that we were talking about are you have the burger joints, and then you have sandwich shops. So that would be Quiznos, Jimmy John's, Subway. And then I would say you could even put Arby's and like Firehouse Subs would be in that category. So really anything where you're serving some kind of a sliced meat on a bun. And then there's also the like Mexican food.
Mexican
I
in
always
air
want to say,
quotes.
yeah, Tex-Mex, American Mex. I always want to say genre with food, but that's not the right word. Like, what category? What's the equivalent of genre for food or restaurants? Style, cuisine.
Nationality, or I would say ethnicity. That doesn't sound right.
I'm gonna use cuisine for now until we think of something better. So, the Mexican cuisine style. So that's, you know, we mentioned Taco Bell, Chipotle. What was the one? Qdoba is another one. So then there's another piece of restaurants where it's kind of a gray area where maybe they serve burgers, maybe they serve sandwiches, maybe they serve one of these other foods. And maybe they don't have a drive-through, or maybe they do. But when you go inside, there's no table service. You order at a counter, you get your food, and then you go sit down.
Yeah, I was gonna say if it has sit down seating, like, and that's like the only way to really get served, because I was thinking like of Red Robin, which is a burger joint,
Yep.
but one, it's definitely higher quality burgers, but it doesn't have a drive through, doesn't have a counter. You have to go sit at a table and you order off a menu just like a normal, when you have a waiter or waitress, just like a normal restaurant. And I would definitely not classify that as fast food, even though it is a burger joint.
So certainly I would say that's an exclusionary criteria from this set is if you are waited on by a staff member, it's not fast food.
I would agree.
Although, let me rethink that. Like Sonic is a drive-in, right? And they have people come take your order, or do they only bring the food out?
Ooh, I've never used that service at Sonic, so I can't tell you.
I haven't either. If any of our listeners know, I'd be curious how that operates exactly. And just to be clear, when I said waited on or served by a member of staff, I meant at a table. So obviously, you know, if you order at the counter, someone's got to still take your order and bring your food to you. But you would seat yourself at a table once you've received your food.
Red Lobster would not be fast food for that reason.
Right. But so conversely, we have Blue Barn Barbecue here in Cedar Falls. Is you order at a counter and you take your food, and they do have a little seating area, but most of it's takeout. And so there's another category of restaurant, I think, that falls into that where it's not fast food, but it's not really a restaurant per se. That's just the takeout category.
And I would say that's a separate thing. You could have a restaurant that's takeout, not fast food. Fast food and not takeout, or both, or neither.
But to me, the whole premise of fast food is, was the restaurant designed around handling vehicle traffic, essentially, right? Like, I think that's how fast food restaurants became a thing, was while people were out driving, you know, and just wanted a quick bite. You could get food without getting out of your car. And then I think there's variations on that, but that's the primary. So, I mean, by that definition, things like Dunkin' Donuts, Starbucks, I mean, you
Yeah.
could add other coffee shops or donut shops to that list as well.
I was kind of sarcastically going to ask if you would consider like Caribou Coffee or Sidecar.
Scooters.
Or yeah, just like would that be fast food too? Because they got a drive-through. You order at that's the same premise. Order at a counter.
I mean, it certainly isn't a burger joint, right? That's obvious, but I would say it's fast food.
And for that reason, I would not classify it as fast food. For and I think a bigger another big factor is the fact that most of the time you're not getting food while you're there. Granted, some of
Oh, yeah.
those cold coffee drinks that are loaded with sugar have like enough calories to support like a family of three.
Wow. Tell us how you really feel. No, but I mean, yes, their primary service is not food, but almost all those places do have food on the menu that plenty of people order. You know, there's scones or breakfast sandwiches or pastries, whatever it might be.
That's true.
But I think, yeah, it's certainly not also something where for most of their menu items are not super healthy, right? If you're just ordering plain coffee or whatever, it's not a big deal. But most of what they offer has a bunch of milk or chocolate or some other form of sugar in it at really all those places.
Yeah.
Also, this is really strange. I'm getting a phone call from a number I don't recognize, and it just keeps ringing. It's not going to voicemail. They're not hanging up. It's been ringing for like a minute now.
Weird. I'm tempted to have you answer it on the podcast.
Not have that temptation. It's a Yeah, I don't know. Anyway. Okay, so any other thoughts to add on the topic of fast food or how we define it? Anything we missed?
That we miss, not necessarily. I'm trying to think if
Oh.
there's any like I mean like obviously our two definitions don't agree, but I'm trying to think it's like should we is one of ours more right than the other? But you were gonna say
Well,
something.
I was trying to think of exceptions to either of our rules. And one of them, based on the definitions that we've given, right? One of them that is a little bit problematic is Steak and Shake. You ever eaten there?
No.
Okay. So I ate there a fair amount in college when I was in Indiana. And it's like a restaurant that's it's kind of like a it's a diner style, like a 50s diner kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And but I feel like they have a drive-through. I'm pretty sure they have a drive-through. And you can also sit down and someone will come and take your order. And so they specialize in these like really inexpensive burger meals and shakes.
Yeah, it sounds like a fast food place to me.
So it sounds like a fast food, but you don't order at a counter. Like they
Oh.
actually have menus and waiters and stuff like that. So I feel like they kind of split the boundary for me between fast food and a restaurant, like a dine-in restaurant.
Maybe you're onto something. Maybe the deciding factor is do they have a drive-through or not? Because if they do, then that means that they are effectively fast food and they're just trying to dress it up as an, oh, you come in, you sit down, there's a waiter. It's like, but you're just serving me a quarter pounder with cheese. You know what I mean? Like the food quality is still the same. If they can whip it up fast enough to warrant a drive-through, then
Yeah.
you're getting the same stuff as a fast food joint, even though they're trying to dress it up as something else.
Yeah.
But if they don't have drive-through, because well, no, like we take your order and we go and make it more like a normal restaurant, it's okay. Then I would not classify them as fast food. So what's making you wonder if it's fast food? Is it just because like Red Robin is sort of like that, where you have to sit down, but you still order like you know, a burger and fries.
Right, but they don't have a drive-thru, right?
Right, but I'm wondering the fact, so is your question about Steak and Shake just, does it have a drive-thru or not? Or does it kind of come across as fast food-esque because of the dirty bathrooms, the over-sanitized smell of the inside, the bright fluorescent lighting, the hard plastic chairs at their tables, and like the low quality of the food you get? Or is it just the, I can't remember if it had a drive-thru or not.
No, I was just, I would qualify them as fast food based on the type of food that they serve and the fact that I think they have a drive-thru. The only point I was making is that it is somewhat of an exception because there is a dine-in experience where someone takes your order at the table.
Okay.
So they're kind of, within the definition I provided, they would be an ambiguity.
That actually gets into the point we made some episodes ago, or at least I don't know if it was us or just me, about, you know, the word of the law versus the spirit of the law.
Uh-huh.
Right? If you get too, if you were just completely reliant on the thou shalt meet these definitions, and then you are an X or a Y, then you have these weird, well, you know, these weird exceptions where it's like, it should be considered fast food, but technically it isn't. And say, well, then don't worry about the technical, you know. Yeah. I think a good litmus test, I don't know what litmus means, but I think I'm using it right, is what? If someone were to say, I'm going to go pick up, like, hold on, I'm going to go pick up some fast food before I come over. And then they come over and you see what they have. Would you be surprised that they called it fast food?
Yeah.
Right. So if they brought stuff back from Steak and Shake, would you be surprised if they called it fast food? Even if you didn't, like, I'm talking about if you didn't know the restaurant yourself.
Right. Yeah.
You saw the food.
No, because you'd have a burger and fries and a shake probably. So
what if they came back with a burger and fries from Red Robin?
That's a good question.
I would not, I would say you, because I would recognize that as like, that's like a burger or like an American style restaurant, but it's not fast food. Cause like, you know, those burgers are distinct from like Mickey D's or something.
Yeah. I mean, it depends, I guess, on how, cause in that you're including quality in the definition or in the spirit of it. Right. And so you'd have to, you're assuming that everyone else would have that same expectation of quality.
Well,
or differentiation.
Again, this is how I would react.
So I think there's another category here of what a lot of people would call bar food, where it's like basically anything that can, it's essentially fast food, but there's no drive-through. And it's maybe a slightly higher quality, or it's made a little bit fancier. But it's fundamentally the same things. You know, it's burger, fries, or something deep fried. Because I think, to me, Red Robin almost falls into that category where it's not, it's better than a drive-thru, but it's still that same type of food.
But you would consider Red Robin bar food?
Yeah, kind of along those lines. I mean, if you're getting a burger, they obviously have a wider menu than that, but I don't know. That kind of gets into like the diner category where it's those plain, quote unquote, American cuisine dishes. There's nothing really fancy about it. It's just burgers and sandwiches, but it's sit down. There's no drive-through. Okay, so I do want to ask our audience, if you've been to Steak and Shake, how would you categorize it? Would it be as fast food, as a diner, something else? And can you think of any other restaurants that kind of thread this needle where we could get a better, more comprehensive understanding of what fast food is? And then my question to you, Jack, is, you said basically for you, a burger joint is kind of the quintessential fast food. So how would you define, or what would you call these types of establishments that don't fall into that category, like KFC or Chipotle or whatever. What term would you use for that kind of food if it's not fast food?
I don't think it ne I mean, I guess I would just call them a restaurant. Now, they're not your typical sit-down restaurants, but so they're kind of closer to fast food than, say, something like an Applebee's. I guess maybe I wouldn't even necessarily qualify it. I would just say like, do you want some KFC or do you want some Chipotle, or I'm going to go to Chipotle. They're kind of like in their own thing where they're not quite a sit-down restaurant, but they're, I won't call them fast food either. Like this middle ground where it's higher quality than fast food, but you don't really go there to like sit down and eat. Granted, when I go to Chipotle, the tables are usually pretty like populated by a bunch of freaks who like to sit in the Chipotle or the Subway and eat there. Who eats at a Subway? Tell me that. Come on, folks.
I used to eat there
I
till
just
I
don't
stopped
get
eating
it.
Subway.
I just don't get why people like to eat in restaurants. Like, I can
It's
understand if it's like a
so.
Village Inn or an Applebee's, you have to eat there, right? Like, that's the point. They make it so that you want to. But like Subway, it's like, we threw some tables out for you if you need to sit here and eat.
I think that's the point, is that if you are ordering a Subway and you don't have to immediately get back on the road, it's like the best way to eat your food fresh, whether it's toasted or you just want it crispy, whatever, just eat it immediately. So it's your chance to enjoy the flavor.
I would still personally, I'm not saying that this is, the right thing. It's just what I would do is I would just go in my car and eat it. 'Cause I don't want like to be in there with a bunch of strangers walking in, listen to the food that they're ordering, criticizing their tastes. I want to just listen to my radio, listen to my podcast, or listen to my music, and then eat in peace.
I like it.
So to go back to your original question that you asked, how would I classify those, the restaurants that under my definition wouldn't be fast food, but under yours would be? I don't think I have a collective classification for them. Like, I don't say, I'm gonna, do you want to go get, fried chicken? I would just say, do you want KFC?
So you would say, if you're going to McDonald's, you would say, do you want fast food? You wouldn't say, do you want McDonald's?
I probably would be more inclined to say, do you want McDonald's? But if I said, or if somebody said to me, do you want fast food? Then I would expect, Katie, where do you want to go? Like McDonald's, Wendy's, Burger King.
Okay. So if they said, do you want fast food, you would be surprised if they said, what about Chick-fil-A?
I would consider Chick-fil-A fast food.
What? Chick-fil-A is fast food, but KFC isn't?
Yeah, because it's
How
more,
does that work?
it's the, well, they have a drive-through, don't they?
Yeah, but so does KFC.
They have the sit down on the, but it's burgers, it's chicken burgers, but they are sandwiches, I guess, technically. But it's like burgers, quote unquote, and fries.
Okay, so for you, KFC doesn't fall, they don't fall into the fast food category because their chicken is on the bone.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely helping their case to not be called fast food.
Okay. Even though you can drive to a window and ask for it, and in 2 minutes you'll have that food in a box.
Yes, because if somebody said, "Hey, I'm going to pick some fast food up before I come over," I say, "Okay," and they show up with a bucket of fried chicken, that is not what I would expect them to bring.
I wouldn't be disappointed if they said fast food and then showed up with a bucket of fried chicken.
I would be disappointed if they didn't get it for the both of us.
Yeah. They're just sitting on your couch eating a
Eating
bucket
a
of fried
bucket of
chicken
fried chicken.
while you look at them. Yeah.
Oh.
Okay.
Well, hold on. Before we move, do you know what litmus means? I'm gonna let
Yeah.
you talk because I need to actually step away from my desk for a moment. I should be able to still listen.
I was gonna mention that when you brought it up. So litmus is actually the type of paper that's used in chemistry to detect the pH levels of a liquid or the acidity. So it's just like these little strips of paper that come in a tube. At least this was what we had in high school. I'm sure there's different forms of it now. But I think it starts out white and then you dip it in whatever fluid you want to measure and it changes colors to either blue or red. And then the specific shade of blue or red that it turns corresponds with a relative acidity or basic. I think that's the level. So the scale is from 1 to 14. The closer you are to 1, the more acidic it is. The closer you are to 14, the more basic it is. And then the shade of the paper tells you where you are on that scale. So something that's highly acidic would, I think red is the acidity end of the spectrum. So something that's highly acidic would be a darker red color. And so we did tests with like Coca-Cola, for example. And you'd see the paper start to turn red because of the acid in it. And then obviously, if you had something that was basic, you'd see it turn blue. So all that to say, the phrase litmus test being used in common language is basically that the litmus paper that you use to test a solution to be as to whether it's acidic or basic, it's that same idea of a standard or a threshold to determine what type of thing something is. And so that's why we use that term litmus test is like this is the proof of are you really what you say you are. That make sense? I'm assuming you're back.
How neat is that? That's pretty neat.
Yeah, I'm back. Well, I'm not back. I'm still doing the thing away from my desk, but I came back because it sounded like you were getting to the end. But that is actually good to know. I didn't realize that acidity test was called litmus paper. I always thought litmus was just like, get a broad feel or like a quick assessment. And I just didn't know where litmus came from. Okay.
I don't know the origin of that though. I don't know if it was a guy called Litmus that came up with it, or if there's some other precursor meaning of it that caused the paper to be called that. But that's in the modern origin
Nice.
of that term.
Right. I still have to go take care of some stuff. I'm just trying to get some laundry done this morning. So I have to go down just to toss the load over. Are we done with the fast food topic? Did we resolve it? Or did you want to still
I
have
think
more stuff
so.
to talk about?
No, I think we've covered all the highlights of that one. So I was going to introduce our next topic. So if you want to go do your other thing, I can get us
Yeah,
lunch.
you do that. Give us a launch. I will be back.
Okay, so our second topic is also food related, and as I mentioned, our topics today came up just in discussion this week at small group. Jack and I were talking as we do, as the whole premise of the podcast originally started. And so we were talking about different categories of fast food and restaurants and things like that. And then I can't remember how we started talking about it, but I think it was in terms of Thanksgiving dishes and stuff like that. But we were asking the question of what. How do you define a salad or what constitutes a salad? Oh, it's actually because Sarah was talking about how she had made Snickers salad. And Jack wasn't familiar with what Snickers salad is. And so I said it's basically vanilla pudding with slices of apple and chunks of Snickers in it. And Jack said, well, that's not salad. And I said, it just depends on what your definition of salad is. And I was reminded of some of the trips that I've taken to Germany, where they have a number of dishes that we would be surprised to see labeled salad. So maybe unpacking that a little bit. If you just say a salad, I think the first thing that comes to people's minds is a bowl of leafy greens, you know, with maybe some tomato and onion and cheese and croutons, whatever, right? Something along those lines. But then we also expand that into things like potato salad or fruit salad. Those are pretty common dishes that people are familiar with. And so they wouldn't say those are just salad, right? That's why we put potato or fruit in front of them. But there's still something about them that's similar in nature where we would agree they are a kind of salad. And so that's really what this discussion is about, is how far does that category stretch? What all things can you, or you can put a word in front of the salad and it still is different, but similar in nature. And I think to me, the defining characteristic of a salad is that it's a dish made up of chunks of disparate materials. And it can, in some instances, include a fluid medium. So if you take fruit salad, for example, it's just chunks of fruit cut up, different kinds of fruit mixed together. Sometimes people serve it in, you know, there's like a yogurt base or a syrup base or a jello base. Maybe not jello. But then in potato salad, you have like a mayonnaise or something that kind of serves to more or less combine the chunks together. And then you might have chunks of potato and, you know, chunks of green onion and chunks of egg or whatever. Egg salad's another one. And so that's kind of the premise that we were discussing, is, you know, what all falls or what's acceptable in that definition of a salad. And is that the right definition of a salad?
I'm back, by the way.
I guessed. But what comes to mind when you hear that intro, Jack?
So, again, like the whole Snicker salad thing and how I reacted, that's not a salad. I was originally going to say it has to involve leafy greens, but then you brought up the example of potato salad and fruit salad, which it got me thinking two different things. One of them, it's like it's an either or. It can't be both these things together. One of them is that it has to involve the base ingredient has to be a plant. Right, like even potato salad or fruit salad, it's still a plant that you're eating. It's not meat. It's not just sugar. It's like some sort of fruit or vegetable, or leafy green, which I don't. Is that technically a vegetable? Lettuce? I'm not sure. Or like spring greens.
Yeah. I'd say those are vegetables.
Yeah. Okay.
Quick tangent on that. Our definitions of fruits and vegetables are very, very subjective.
Oh yeah, like there is,
or like semantics. Yeah,
not like it's not a scientific, this is technically a vegetable. Well, there's the whole tomatoes aren't vegetables, they're fruits thing.
But that's true of many types of vegetables, because the scientific definition of a fruit is if the edible, I'm trying to remember exactly, it's like if the edible or the portion of the, how am I saying this?
I don't know.
It's basically if the edible part of the plant contains the seeds, then it's a fruit. That's like the most simple scientific definition of a fruit, or botanical definition of a fruit, whatever term you want to use. And so by that definition, nearly everything that we call a vegetable is technically a fruit. So
not everything. Like, what about celery stalks?
No, not everything, but many, many things.
Oh,
so my argument is that in common usage, fruit is sweet and veggies are savory. That's how we use that term.
Or at least not sweet, because I wouldn't call celery savory, but or carrot.
Sure. Savory. Yeah. Yeah.
I would always see I'm more of the let's not rely so much on, and this, I'm not arguing that this is the best way of doing it. It's probably the worst way of doing it, of let's not focus on our experience with it. Let's just call fruit, like, we should call fruit the thing that the plant creates that is supposed to be tasty to eat, that it deliberately makes, like, hey, you should eat this part of me, because then it puts its seeds in there, and then that helps the seeds get distributed and helps it, you know, create plant babies. So strawberries.
I think that's just a plain English definition of the scientific version, right? Because then a squash is still a fruit.
Yes, but then nuts would be fruits as well. But I think, I mean,
that's
nuts,
a lot of nuts.
Nuts and fruits, I mean, like, botanically, it's the same purpose and it's the same thing. It's just that one strategy is that, hey, let's make it sugary to entice animals to eat me versus let's not do that. So really the only difference is the strategy that the plant is using to entice animals to eat it. Maybe not, because acorns, the trees probably don't want the acorns to be eaten, right? Because they maybe fruit. So trees or plants, right? They have seeds that they need to get distributed out somewhere, preferably not right at their base. Otherwise, they'll be competing with their own children for food and water and sunlight. I think plants have taken at least two different strategies. One of them is what we're talking about right now, fruits. Hey, let's put our seeds in a little care package for animals. Let's make that care package delicious for them to eat, so that they will take the care package off and either go eat it somewhere else, dropping the seeds, or they'll even just eat the seeds with the care package, poop it out, and then, hey, look at that. Our babies have a little care package of their own to start their new life off. That's strategy number one. And then strategy number two is the non-fruit method where, okay, as the plant, I'm going to develop these seeds like acorns or the little helicopter whirligigs on maple trees. And mm-hmm. I'm not going to rely on animals to come eat a fruit to take my seeds away. I'm going to inherently make my seeds just inherently distribute themselves based on how they fall and float on the air. So like dandelion, seeds are like that. They have the little parachute sort of things, umbrella sort of things that catch in there and distribute them. You know, those plants don't, you know, if animals were to eat their seeds, that'd be bad. Whereas plants with fruit, the animals eating the fruit's a good thing for the tree because it gets their seeds everywhere. So I would, in my case, specify that fruits are those things coming off of plants that use that first strategy, whereas maybe nuts would fall into that second category. Or maybe it's legumes. I don't know the difference between the two.
Sure. So that brought up an interesting tangent in my mind, which is that I've wrestled for a long time with why, because you were talking about the strategy of a fruit, and you said, you know, kind of gift wrapping seeds in a care package that something else will consume it, take it a little ways away, you know, within the region, but then it's also going to be planted with some amount of fertilizer, presumably, and in conditions to grow. And it's like, well, maybe this is too anthropomorphizing or too personifying, but it's like, why would a tree produce fruit to begin with? Because the fruit doesn't help the tree to grow, right? The tree doesn't get taller, stronger, whatever, by producing fruit. Fruit is of no benefit
to the tree itself.
To the tree that produces it, right?
Yep. It's and only so a detriment because it takes probably a lot of resources generating all that sugar, and
right?
Exporting all the water, yeah.
Right, and so it's this was what I was getting to, is it's a really weird scenario in which the genes of the tree itself behave in a way that is to the detriment of the life expectancy optimization of that individual tree by causing it to put forth this highly caloric care package with seeds for the next generation.
Yep.
So it's this weird thing where your biological urge to reproduce as a plant or as a animal, whatever, is actually significantly costly to your existence. Right? But it's it's this weird conundrum almost where the genes which incite reproduction are the genes which survive. And so they're going to continue to incite reproduction.
Right.
So that's, it's not even that it's the best thing. It's not even that it makes the individual most suitable to survive. It's that the gene is most suitable to survive.
Right.
Which is a realization I've never really had before, is that it can be the fitness isn't necessarily even at the animal or the organism level, right?
Right.
It's a genetic level across a population.
It's
which is wild.
I'm really chomping at the bit because this is something I've realized too. But
go ahead. I was just kind of unpacking that thought, but I'm now just thinking about it more as I've digested it.
You're right. Because I've had similar realizations before, right? Where it's like this gene, if it's really survival of the fittest, this trait of this animal or this plant doesn't make sense because it makes the individual organism less fit than if it didn't do it. But I think that the phrase survival of the fittest either is a misnomer, it's a bit misleading, or let me rephrase it. It either missed the mark a little bit, enough to be misleading, or we as the general population seeing the phrase survival of the fittest are assuming or have incorrect assumptions of what fittest means. Because I think when we say survival of the fittest, the general population thinks, oh, you know, this Triceratops was bigger and stronger than this other one, so it was able to defeat, it was able to fend off predators more, it was able to compete for mates more, so that's the one that survived and the weak one died. It's like, no, fit doesn't necessarily mean strength or athleticism. It just means that it's not fit in the sense of fitness, it's fit for passing, like, you know, for reproduction.
And it's survival of the most repeatable.
Basically. Survival of the most prolific, right? I think if you have, it's not a matter of the individual organism surviving, it's a matter of reproducing so much or reproducing in a way so that your race or your species doesn't get, you know, that it survives and ideally thrives.
Right.
So even if the tree, let's use the example of the tree, if it evolves, if it starts developing this mutation, like, hey, my seeds are having this weird sugary fleshy coating on them, like this weird benign tumor stuff growing around my seeds, this sucks. Well, look at that. A bunch of animals came and took my seeds away into their own little groves, and now they can grow, develop their own little tumorous seeds, and they're not competing for resources like I've had to do with, you know, people of my or trees of my generation. So now they're going to thrive. The ones without the benign tumors aren't, even though the ones with the benign tumors on the sugary, fleshy, benign tumors around their seeds may be a little bit weaker because they have to, you know, devote more sugar and water and sunlight to growing the tumors, but they're going to reproduce more. So even though those trees might be weaker, the fact that they're strong enough to survive, but much better at reproducing, means that they're going to take over.
Yeah. I have to say, as an aside, my life is never going to be the same now that you've used the word tumor to describe the flesh of a fruit.
That might have been how it started.
That's upsetting. That's very upsetting.
That might have been how it started. We know.
I don't know if I can eat fruit again, to be honest. But
there's tumor. That's why they compare tumors to the size of fruits.
Oh, Yes, I'm sure that's why.
I've cracked the code.
Yeah, so just putting that in a very simple example, you could have a tree that grows bigger, faster, stronger than all the other trees in the grove. But if that tree does not produce seeds or fruit in one generation, as soon as that tree dies, every tree in the grove will be a fruit-bearing tree, right? And then the trees which are better at producing seeds and having them return to the soil in ideal conditions over several generations are going to become the dominant species of tree in that grove, you know, if there's a blend of them. So again, it has nothing to do with that individual with its lifespan. It's basically how likely is that individual to create more of itself. And the more that it can create, and the longer those creations can survive, the more likely it is to become the dominant species in that environment.
I think it's important to, when we say fit, we're talking about, what are its chances of the organism surviving long enough to reproduce, as much as it can. And what are the odds of its reproduced babies, offspring, of surviving, just to like to the point where they are now their own organisms, and then you start the question over again. So, like, sea turtles, where they lay a bunch of eggs and only like a handful of them make it to the ocean, I don't think they have a lot of predators. So the first question of, what are the odds that this organism can reproduce a lot? It's pretty good. It's pretty fit in that regard. But then what are the odds of its, like of its multiplying itself? Not that high, relatively. So you take those two probabilities and multiply them together, and that's your effective fitness level. Because I think so many people focus only on the first one. What are the odds that this organism, this individual animal, or this individual tree is going to make it? Oh, it's really strong. It's really good at defending itself, getting a mate. Okay, well, how likely is it that it's going to produce more offspring, or that it's, what are the odds it's going to produce, enough offspring to, I don't know, meet some other criteria? Well, if that probability is pretty low, then the animal or the plant as a whole is not very fit, and it can be really weak, right? Like a lemming can be, or a rabbit can, not very fit in the first regard, but making babies like rabbits, it's like that second probability is pretty good.
So there's really two elements of fitness. There's the survival to reproductive maturity, and then there's how many copies can you produce, right? And
That's
so there is an element where even those things that are prolific reproducers, often it's the case that they have to be because their survival till reproduction maturity is very low. Right. And so their reproductive rates have to be super high to offset that. And vice versa, those that survive easily to maturity don't have to reproduce as many.
Right. So you would see animals or plants that fit that mold because they are able to make it. They're able to be, have a sustainable, I don't know what you would call it, sustainable. I was going to say lifeline, but that,
Population.
yeah, sustainable population throughout, the eons.
So I don't remember how we got there from salad. It was
That was from salad.
the
Holy.
bait that was from the comment that you were saying that to be considered a salad, the primary ingredient has to be a fruit or a vegetable, basically.
Yes. Because, and so that, so my, okay, and I remember. So when you gave your definition, I had two thoughts pop in my head. Either originally it has to have leafy greens as its main ingredient, but then potato and fruit salad said, okay, it just has to be a plant-based fruit or vegetable. That was my thought number one. And then, but then my thought number two was, and that's what I can't really remember. Maybe it'll come back to me. But I did have another thought, which is at some point, Ben, if based on your definition, where it's just like some chopped up, you know, medley of stuff suspended in some sort of media, whether that media is, or medium, whether it's light, like a salad dressing, and it's not really the bulk of the meal, or it could be something right. like the Snicker salad or potato salad, where it's okay, now that medium is kind of taking up a good chunk of the calories and the volume and the weight. Where do we draw the line between salads and stews?
Yes, thank you. This is where my mind was going, because I was about to ask if cereal counts as a salad. And I'm just going to tie it back to our episode a couple of weeks ago.
Oh my gosh.
If cereal it all is a
comes
chowder.
Back full circle.
Yeah. That's a really good point. So I think that's probably the fatal flaw with the limited definition that I provided, because I think we would all agree that a cereal or a stew is not a salad. So I think there would have to be an additional component added in which the medium has like a high viscosity where it doesn't flow at room temperature. Something along those lines.
Like potato salad. Well,
like potato salad.
Olive oil, you know, that some salads only use olive oil. That flows at room temperature. It's not very viscous.
Yeah.
Not compared to mayonnaise.
So here's the other thing I was going to say, which is, and I think I mentioned it when I was introducing the topic, but like when I was in Germany, they had a dish called meat salad, which, if memory serves, was like chopped up ham in some sort of like a mayonnaise base. And maybe there was cheese in it or something else. I can't remember. But it's kind of like, it's like if you were to order a pasta salad, you know, you could get it at a deli somewhere, and it's just noodles and cheese and chunks of meat and maybe some olives with like a little bit of, I don't like olive oil sauce, or I guess I don't know what kind of sauce they put on it. So pasta salad or meat salad, either of those doesn't involve, you know, a fruit or a vegetable as the primary base chopped up. You know what I mean? So are those outside of a salad definition? Are they stretching it too far?
So there's two things that come. So I always thought when people said, oh, you know, it's a, what's the dish where it's got like the fluff and jello in it, or
fluff and jello.
Yeah, never mind. But like the Snicker salad, right? Or like any sort of salad that's more desserty. I always thought that the salad was sort of tongue in cheek, you know. Oh, it's a salad. You know, elbow, elbow. And like nobody would really consider that a salad. I don't think right. I've never thought that's, you know, if somebody said, oh, there's a Snicker salad. It's, oh yeah, funny. What's it actually called? No, it's technically a salad. This is an actual salad. You know, they would never really, I would never expect people to be serious about calling it a salad, that it's always kind of like a joke, or we didn't know what else to call it, but yeah, it's not really a salad. But then, hold on. So that was half my thought, but then I'm thinking, you know, we have the base salad, which is just leafy greens, but then we have potato salad. We have Snicker salad, we have meat salad, and then fruit salad, right? And in every one of those instances, the word in front of salad, pasta, fruit, meat, is then the main constituent that the other little added mix-ins are, you know, intermixed with. So maybe,
right,
when we say potato salad or fruit salad or meat salad, it's really just like, we're going to take the concept of a salad where we have one base chopped up ingredient and we mix in a bunch of smaller, you know, lesser amounts of other ones and put some sort of dressing in it. We're going to take that concept, but we're going to do it with something that isn't leafy greens. We're going to do it with potatoes or with fruits or with meat or something.
Right. Yeah.
So maybe we're asking, I think you had a thought, but I think maybe we're too focused on, are these other things literally salads? And if so, or we're I think we're too focused on we're assuming that these other things are literally salad. So how do you define a salad? Maybe we should just say, no, a salad is leafy greens, but then you can take that concept and spread it to other things, but you have to call it something else. You could still refer to it as a something salad, but that's more tongue in cheek because what else are we going to call it?
Yeah, so I think you're moving in the right direction. What I would, my counterpoint would be that we don't call, like, potato salad isn't tongue-in-cheek. We're not saying, well, this is, it's a salad, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, right? It's, there's a an attribute of what a salad is that we say, now apply that to potatoes. And it's, so it's something about the arrangement or the structure of the dish that makes it a salad. And so I think there's almost two definitions here. There's a, like a capital S salad, which would be leafy greens, and there's a lowercase s salad. And this isn't actually true, right? But I'm describing two ideas or two concepts. So one is this dish that is specifically leafy greens as a salad. And then there's a definition, which is this chopped up chunks of things concept, which can be applied to any material. And so the way I would almost say it is, like, the reason that you don't have to call it a veggie salad or a green salad or a lettuce salad or whatever is that's the default. And so it's like an implied lettuce salad where the salad word is still the description of the arrangement. And the implication is that the material is lettuce primarily, right? And so the reason we add the modifier explicitly when it isn't lettuce is because it's not the default. And so if you just said salad, I'm bringing a salad, then everyone would assume it's going to be lettuce. If you say I'm bringing a potato salad, they go, oh, it's still a salad. It's still this chopped up dish, but now he's using potatoes instead of lettuce, whatever. So I think there's... certainly with a dessert, I think there is an element of kind of ha-ha with it. But I do also think it's maybe a 50-50 because they are saying there's this mechanical presentation of the dish in which it's this mix of chunks of things that aren't really connected in any way. And so that part's not a joke. The joke part is that it's not similar to lettuce. It's not healthy. But I think there is a serious part, which is trying to describe how the dish is presented or served.
Yeah, I really like that train of thought. Right, if we have the base and we're going to give it, like, it's a really good compromise of, look, we all know what a salad is. This mix of candy suspended in maple syrup is not a salad. But it's a good compromise of that. But then also, like, well, we don't have to be so strict on what makes a salad, because it's like how strict are we going to get? Like, oh, you use spinach instead of spring mix. It's not a salad.
Right.
So I think if we have the base definition, if you just said, I'm bringing a salad or I want a salad, then if everybody agrees that means leafy greens, then, and if we want to make like a potato salad or a fruit salad, we have to add the what's the word I'm looking for? Not adjective, but the descriptor.
Modifier?
Thank you. The modifier in front of it. Then, yeah, I would say, yeah, then I would consider those, quote, well, I wouldn't consider them base salads. I would consider them maybe salad. So what do we, hold on, here's the question. What do we call the whole group? Because we can't call them salads because we can't call them, quote, salads, end quote, because a, quote, salad, end quote, is the base. You know what I mean? So you can't say potato salad is a salad because a salad involves leafy greens. Maybe, well, salad derivatives, or it's part of the salad group.
So that's where I was going to say, I think your admonition to use the spirit of the law versus the letter applies here both ways, which is if we're talking about a salad, part of the spirit of that, not the whole thing, but a part of the spirit of that, is that it is a plant-based, healthy dish. But another part of the spirit of that is that it is a dish comprised of chopped up chunks of things. And so I think to call it salads, to put potato salad or pasta salad into this category of salads, is adhering to part of the spirit of that. But it's really because we're talking about kind of these two different definitions. And what I was going to say is that if the evidence that salad contains both the implication of leafy greens and the implication of how the dish is presented, if it didn't contain both of those, then we would have to describe, when you listed a salad on a menu, you would have to describe it as a lettuce salad or a leafy green salad or whatever, which we don't. And that we haven't developed another, there isn't another word for, you know, this mechanical mixture, blending of chunks of different foods. Well, casserole, I guess. We call them pasta. Oh. Except a casserole becomes a cohesive whole, right? Where it has to be like cut to be separated.
You can't really toss it. Yeah.
Right. You have to cut. So it's like the chunks become a whole, and in a salad, the chunks never become a whole. They're only, the only thing that makes them a whole is the container that they're in, the dish that they're served in. So all that to say, I mean, it's even where you're trying to follow the spirit of the law, or the spirit of the word, I think there's a, it's still ambiguous, because I don't think we're, I don't think someone's trying to follow the letter of it to call a potato salad a salad.
You know, I think I would be satisfied if we had, this would be better if I could draw it out, but I'm still a little iffy on calling potato salads, fruit salads, meat salads, Snicker salads, pasta salads as salads, because we already have a definition. So you know what the problem is? The problem is that we have one word to describe the whole category and a particular item in that category.
Correct.
That's the problem. Now, I can see why that happened, because originally there was just the leafy green salad, and that was a salad, and that was that. And then people started saying, why don't we use something other than leafy greens? You know, it'll be like a salad, but with potatoes. It'll be a potato salad. And then the trend continued, and now we have this nomenclature problem that is causing all sorts of confusion in podcast episodes. So
they're proliferating.
Yes. The salads are survival of the fittest. Yes.
it's because of the benign tumor that's been wrapped around the term of salad, you know?
Yes, right. Yes.
So no, that's a really good point. The fact that it's a descriptor for the category and for an item within the category is the crux of the challenge, right?
So, yep. And so we can do two things. We can either rename the category, or we can rename the sub item to be, to match the other items in the category, right? So it's like, rather than a salad and a potato salad and a fruit salad, we would just have a leafy salad and a potato salad and a fruit salad. And then we'd call the whole category a salad.
Right.
I think that's the most rational, or like the most sensical, while you're in a bubble sort of thing, where it's like, yeah, it makes the most sense on paper, but then that would also be the one that caused the most confusion, because people would say, no, like they would have this problem, like, no, a salad is leafy green by default. So then I think the better option is to rename the category. But then what do you call a category? Because it gets so tempting to say a salad, a potato salad, a fruit salad, and a meat salad are all salads. That's the most tempting thing to say. But Hence, that's where we're at right now. We've been talking for like 45 minutes on why that's a problem.
Right. And so I would argue the term salad is already a category, even if you're thinking leafy greens, because there's a Caesar salad and a Cobb salad and a chopped salad, right, and a romaine salad, right? So when you, I think what part of the problem is, in common usage, we use the category to mean, we use the category generically because we assume that the definition of the specific item is understood enough that we don't need to provide the description. But in theory, if you came to my house and I offered you a salad, you could say, sure, I'll take one. And I could present you with, even by the leafy greens definition, I could present you with a Cobb salad, a Caesar salad, a house salad, you know, what's the term for a wedge salad? I could present it to you four different ways that all fall under that quote unquote salad category, subcategory sort of thing. So my position would be that you don't actually have to rename anything. We should just stop using the category to mean a specific type of leafy green salad, which would most commonly be like a house salad or something like that, or a Caesar salad, because we already have these other descriptors for leafy types of leafy green salads that would all also fall under that salad category. If you're talking, you're on mute.
I am on mute. Sorry, I didn't quite understand your... Can you give your definition or like your solution again? I didn't quite understand it.
Oh, I was just saying, like, right now, what you were saying is, if we just said leafy green salad and then called the category was salads and then we put the modifier in front of salads that we understood it was leafy green. My point was, those modifiers already exist in common usage. We just need to be more consistent in using them to say, like, a Cobb salad, a Caesar salad, a wedge salad, whatever, an iceberg salad, right? That's the word I was looking for earlier. So maybe the most common type of salad would be, would you like an iceberg salad, instead of saying a salad?
Sure. I think that's a solution that makes sense on maybe on paper, but then if you try to implement it, now you'd have to start getting really specific when you talk about salads. And then you could just never really, it's because like if you were to ask somebody, hey, do you want a salad? It's like, sure, you know, give me a meat salad. It's like, that's not really what I'm prepared to make you. Well, you said, if yeah. I, you know, do I want a salad? Yeah, that's a salad. It's like, okay, you know, but.
So do we call the category then, we need a new name, like chopped up stuff?
I mean, that's what I'm advocating, that we rename everything. But even then, it would be, I think it's just the least bad of the available options.
It will be the opposite of bad or dab. We could call the category, instead of salad, we could call it Dallas.
Yes, these are just salad backwards. Yep. Dallas's.
These are some Dallas. Would you like to choose a Dallas? It is also problematic because if you look at restaurants, salads as a category are often only like the leafy green kind. And then if you're going to order potato salad, pasta salad, any other kind of salad, it just shows up under sides with a bunch of other things that are not salad in form.
Uh-huh.
Right. So we've stumbled upon a critical fault in our language that we don't have a good way to categorize these items.
Yep. And that's not necessarily anybody's fault. It's just kind of how things developed over time, how the salad conversation evolved, if you will.
I put the blame squarely on Mr. English for creating such a faulty language structure.
Mm. Yeah, we have a lot to say to, we have a lot to talk to, or a lot to talk about with Mr. English.
But I, do have another engagement, which for those who are familiar, is the game today, Michigan versus Ohio State. And that's going to be occupying the next several hours of my time. So I need to skedaddle. And I do feel like we had some really great tangents today, though. We covered our topics and we had some interesting tangents about fitness and several other things.
We did. It was a good one.
So, again, if you have thoughts on categories of fast food or how you would define a salad, we welcome those thoughts. We love hearing that people are thinking about the podcast as they listen to it and generating their own ideas. It's always interesting to see what else people come up with. Sometimes those feed into future podcast topics. So do let us know. And as always, if you want to join us as a guest, feel free to sign up using the link in the episode description. And we will talk to you next time. Until then, take care.